largely your call in.
Yep.
I think I'll have a leisurely call and just sit back and listen. I'm expecting you to teach me a lot of things too, Josh, because I know you've gone into depth with this. We'll see. Okay, now, just coming up to the hour, in fact, so I'm going to mute everybody and start the call formally. Just give me a second to do that. All right, so hi, everybody. So welcome to this call. I'm going to be talking to Josh about two rather different kinds of sauna, the infrared sauna and ozone sauna. Josh and I was going to explain the technical differences between the two. But I thought I'd just, with your indulgence, Josh, I'll just have a couple of minutes before we start. Because there's a nice bit of synchronicity today. Most of you, I think, know that I recently published a book called Cancer Confidential, and I've been revising and updating that. I'm pretty well over my elbow injury now. I can hit the keyboard, although it'd be slowly. And I started to work on a section I needed to do, which effectively was it introduced a little bit of quantum physics. I was talking about Otto Warburg's theory that, you know, we need oxygen to protect us from cancer, and that low oxygen environments probably one of the main causes of cancer. Well, oxidation and that whole phenomenon goes a little bit beyond just whether oxygen is there or not. I mean, that's one answer. You take oxygen, whether it's hyperbaric oxygen or other forms. But oxidation in science also means the matter of grabbing electrons. The opposite of that is donating electrons, and that's called reduction. But oxidation is the one that is stressful to the tissues and potentially damaging. That's one of the reasons we take antioxidants. Anyway, I went deeper and deeper into Otto Warburg's theory. I was talking about the way that electrons get excited by photons from the sun. See, ultimately, all our life and nutrition comes from the sun. Source of the energy. Plants are able to use that energy. We can't directly, but the plants do, and they can process that into foodstuffs, which we then go and eat. And fortuitously also, plants breathe in carbon dioxide and breathe out oxygen. We do the opposite, so it's really rather a nice symbiosis that we have. But it's plants that do the main lifting, as it were, in converting sunlight into foodstuffs. We eat the plants, and therefore we become enriched. But all the time of our lives, we're still subject to the bombardment of solar energies with photons, which are effectively little packets of energy, and they can cause electrons. I hope you all know what electrons are. They're little tiny negatively charged particles, ever so teeny, that whiz around the nucleus of an atom. And they do it in orbits. And in fact, they moving from one orbit to another, different shells, is one. It's actually the basic definition of quantum physics. Let's get into this for just a second, because you're going to hear the word quantum, I'm sure, through the call. Surprisingly, you might wonder what ozone saunas have got to do with quantum physics, but Josh will tell you that. But anyway, quantum is when an electron moves from one shell to another, and in dropping down a level, it actually releases the energy as a little packet of energy. We call it a quantum. It's the same, effectively, as a little particle of light, but with the word quantum, of course, gave rise to quantum physics. But it was all very weird. It was all very shocking at the beginning of quantum physics, because these effects did something that was completely unknown in physics, that an electron would instantly relocate itself from one shell to another. There was no question of traveling from one place to another. That's what we're used to, of course, in the workings of the physical universe up to that time. But scientists found that these relocations of electrons were absolutely instantaneous. It was like, if you want an example, it's like going out one night and seeing that the moon is suddenly a million miles away, and then a split second later, it's suddenly back where it was. No traveling between the two places. It was just in one place, then suddenly it was in another place. That shift is what we actually mean by a quantum jump. That's the scientific term. I know that's got translated into popular use now as a quantum leap, but it's usually used by people not knowing what it really means. That's what it means. It means a sudden change of state that releases energy, and a very weird change of state that's without any process or any movement. It's just instantaneous. That's at the heart of quantum physics, and the shift of these electrons up and down their orbits are really what we're talking about when we're talking about the energies that Josh and I are going to discuss in the living, you know, the life organism situation. See, we're bathed in sun, all these photons come pouring out of the sun, land on Earth, and they can excite and energize our electrons in our bodies. And in fact, if there's no excitation of electrons going on, we'd be dead. So it's a very important process. Some of it's an intermediate through plants, but some of it is a direct effect on us. And you'll be hearing that you can actually influence the energy states of these electrons using actually both of the devices that we're going to be talking about. But I just sort of say that. First of all, it's a bit of interesting synchronicity. I should have been working on the same thing this morning that Josh wants to discuss this evening. But also, I do want you to understand, you know, when this term quantum and electron excitation comes up, that you've got some idea what it's about. We don't need to be any more technical than that. But let's just say the whole thing is really rather wonderful and mysterious, and scientists could do to be a lot more humble in the face of these mysteries. We don't really understand life and what it's doing. In fact, the whole idea of quantum biology was laughed at for decades. But now it seems the opposite, and that's what's special about life. It's only quantum energy, and all the Newtonian stuff is a waste of time. It doesn't really apply to life. Okay, Josh, do you think that's a fair setup? It's an interesting coincidence, isn't it? We were both doing the same thing in the course of the day.
Yeah, and once you get into this stuff, it's so interesting, but there's just so much of it, and I'm hoping we can cover it all on this call, because I know we have a limited time here.
Okay, well, let me lay out some just rough framework, Josh. If you could just spend a couple of sentences, for those who don't know who you are. Not everybody on my list knows who you are. I don't know if you've invited people from your list.
Actually, I haven't.
So just say who you are and what you do. I can give you my endorsement by saying Josh is a very fine young man. He runs his business in an extremely ethical way, very honest and straightforward, which is why I like to deal with him. And that isn't altogether usual in the alternative medicine field either. There's a surprising lot of banditos out there. So I like that. So introduce yourself briefly. And then maybe let's just do a quick outline of the two kind of things we're going to be talking about, and then dive into the lower layers. Would you do that for us, Josh?
Thanks, Keith. My name's Joshua Parker, and in 1999, I founded FutureTechToday.com, and since then I've been teaching people about alternative health technology and what kind of things it might be able to help them with. And that's what brings us to our topic today of comparing high-tech saunas. So I'm excited. So we're going to talk about far infrared sauna technology as well as ozone steam sauna technology and some of the crossovers, some of the related technologies, how they cross over into each other as well. Some of the things that we'll cover will probably be new to you even if you are familiar with some of the steam sauna, far infrared, or other technologies. So let's start with ozone.
The ozone, of course, is generated through electricity, or my preferred method of ozone is a technology called cold plasma, which is a bit different. Even with things like colloidal silver, people think of that as something different, but you know, it all comes back to energy medicine, and that's been my topic of study. Leading now to what we're going to talk about, which is a type of oxygen therapy and far infrared therapy, which are two different types of energy medicine, as I'll be explaining.
Well, for those that aren't very technical, can you just give the broad outline of each, you know, the sort of two-minute lift speech for each type so that people have got the framework to hang on what else you're going to be saying?
Absolutely. Yeah, the basis for far infrared technology, which a lot of folks might be somewhat familiar with because these days we've come to a time where even these far infrared saunas are being sold at places like Sam's Club and coming into local department stores almost. I think it depends on the area, the locality, but at least in the United States that's becoming a really popular topic. But far infrared, and I'll get into why a lot of those types of saunas that are commonly available are really not delivering what they're claiming to be delivering, which is this far infrared energy. And then ozone technology is basically, it's a form of oxygen, which has three molecules of oxygen in the molecule, or three atoms of oxygen in the molecule. It's an unstable form of oxygen, and it breaks down into an oxygen radical, which is something I'm going to talk about in detail. It gets into some of what you just introduced, and it's really interesting stuff. It actually conflicts a lot with the predominant theories cellular biochemistry. You know, I want to start with the fact that I am not a doctor, and so nothing I say should be insinuated as any kind of medical claims. I've done a lot of research on these topics, and I'm here to share with you what I've learned and to try to convey that so that you can more fully understand these topics. But I don't make any medical claims about any of the topics I'll be discussing or any of the technology or products that we'll be referring to.
Right. Now, it's important to say that, isn't it? Because orthodox medicine now has a sort of frenzy against ozone. You know, it's considered the most deadly toxic stuff on Earth. You know, I mean, obviously up in the higher atmosphere in large quantities it is. But the kind that we're talking about is ridiculously safe, isn't it? I mean, oxygen is this one. All ozone is oxygen rich. And, you know, oxygen is something that's so critical for life. A lot of people don't know that the inventor Nikola Tesla got involved in this technology. He invented ozone generators that he patented. And there's a reputed, I don't know if you know this, Josh, reputedly a book in the Library of Congress somewhere that's about ozone, medical ozone therapy, that's stamped and endorsed by the U.S. Surgeon General. But that's a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the modern climate, no orthodox doctor would dare say there may be something to this ozone story.
Yeah.
And mainly on these safety grounds, and it's absurd. In the kind of quantities, you know, low-level quantities we're talking about, there are no safety issues whatsoever, and I can assure you of that. And it's practiced, I need to say this for Americans, Josh, practiced by ethical doctors in good standing, legally, you know, really good doctors in all parts of the world. It's only in the USA when you're considered a rascal if you try and use this kind of technology. But it's just a geographic thing. You know, doctors are free to practice the kind of medicine they choose in most other territories, mm-hmm. just not here. So, all right, having said that, back to you, Josh.
But like other technologies that seem to become, in certain cases, very effective, there are reactions of strong detoxification that can be seen as side effects when the processes aren't quite understood. And that's why I think it's really important to be aware of the power of some of these technologies and the intense detoxification that can come about. So, that said, using ozone in a steam sauna is one of the least invasive, or if not the least invasive, way of using ozone, and it's been used for literally 100 years now in ozone steam saunas. So this is not something new. Ozone is used by doctors in a handful of states in the United States, but it's also banned in certain states based on various political issues.
You know, this is difficult for foreigners, Josh, you know, that don't understand the USA. When I came here, to me it was just like 50 different countries, not one country. That you know, you could be in serious criminal, on serious criminal charges in one state for doing what's perfectly legal in another state, even though it's all the USA. It's very confusing to foreigners, and of course makes it very difficult and dangerous for doctors. Mm-hmm. You have to be very sure what the rules are in the territory you occupy, yeah?
Yeah. And the only reason I touch on that is that doctors in some states and some countries do use ozone in much more intense ways than an ozone steam sauna. And I'm going to leave that topic for another discussion because we have so much other stuff to cover here. I want to start by just summing up the connection between ozone and far infrared. Just to touch on a phenomenon called ozone decay light, which is a 762 nanometer wavelength, which is emitted in the reaction of ozone, actually the O1 radical decaying down to its ground state. And I just want to, I'm going to get back into that and explain that in more detail, but that 762 nanometer wavelength is an infrared wavelength, so it's an interesting tie-in to far infrared. In contrast with that, far infrared wavelength is seven to 14 nanometers. And the key here, when looking at far infrared, is that we naturally, and the Earth naturally, and the Sun naturally, are emitting these far infrared wavelengths in this range.
sure you haven't left a few behind here, because nanometers and so on might turn a few off. Let's just describe the electromagnetic spectrum just in brief. It includes light, but it includes radio waves. And the different characteristics depend on the wavelength, don't they? The very shortest one are gamma rays. We call that radioactivity. And it's very dangerous. And a bit less short wavelength, that's X-ray. And as the wavelengths get longer and longer, you move through blue light and then into red light and then into infrared, which means, you know, less than the red. So those are longer wavelengths than red. So there's near and far infrared, but they're basically just beyond the red end of the light spectrum, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And as you keep going with lengthening wavelengths, then next you come to microwaves and radar waves, and finally radio waves, which are very long. So that to put that in perspective, you know, far infrared is just a part of that whole spectrum. It lies just outside visible light. But infrared basically means heat, yeah? Heat and warmth.
Yeah. So we can't see these infrared wavelengths, but our body can feel this.
The camera can, of course. You can have infrared cameras, as people know.
Yeah.
That will actually react like a photograph, but our eyes are not sensitized to it. We have to take the photograph and then look at the photograph. Yes.
Yeah, our bodies naturally produce a far infrared heat, and that's actually part of the way we warm our tissues and increase our body temperature. That gets into tissue repair as well. When we can match those far infrared waves that we naturally, or that far infrared heat that we naturally emit, we can attain a resonance, and this effect is going to come about when using a far infrared sauna that is properly tuned to the proper wavelength, and not all of them are, and unfortunately that gets into the fact that there's really no regulation in the production of far infrared saunas, so you really have to look carefully at what you're getting, or else you're probably not going to get what you're expecting, and that comes into the technology behind the far infrared heaters, and I'll get into that more. But the bottom line is that when we match the infrared spectrum of our own bodies with a far infrared heat in the sauna, we can attain a resonance, and the body will naturally, through selective absorption, increase the temperature of certain tissues more than others. That's where the energy is directed to the specific areas that need it more, and then the rest of the energy passes on to other tissues. And this is how the far infrared rays can increase the body temperature very selectively, in a way that's much more like what happens internally when we exercise. So this is the type of increasing of body temperature and perspiration that's going to happen when doing fitness or exercise, and that's very different than the type of sweating that would occur when in a traditional type of sauna where the skin is just heated with normal heat.
Right. I mean, that's hot air, isn't it, rather than hot tissues. The infrared sauna is hot tissues, but the traditional sauna is hot, moist-laden air that heats up the skin directly and doesn't penetrate very much.
Yeah, and the response means a very different type of detoxification that's more of an internal reaction and an external reaction rather than just opening up of the sweat glands. So, so that's kind of a tie-in to, you know, why I wanted to talk about far infrared at the same time as ozone, because there really is a connection. So first of all, I wanted to start by explaining that most far infrared saunas, most saunas that are called far infrared saunas are not really what people are expecting. To get into that, I wanted to start with a little bit of a history of far infrared and this technology. Like a lot of this kind of technology, the origin came from Asia. Really, it got popularized after Sherry Rogers' book, Detoxify or Die, in 2002, which a lot of folks may or may not be familiar with. It's a very popular book, though, and one of the sections discussed far infrared. Far infrared saunas became really popular in the last number of years with the popularity lot of confusion really has come about in the market, as far as I'm concerned. And one of the big things is the type of heaters that are used. There's a few basic types of heaters, but they're really very, most of them are very similar. But the materials used include ceramic, carbon, and charcoal, as well as various other kind of minerals. This technology is not just inside far infrared saunas, but there's also a lot of other types of heat lamps, infrared heat lamps, TDP mineral lamps, and different types of products like this, and different types of domes, and some of them even little zip up bags that you can get inside, and basically various types of things that have a far infrared heater of some sort in it, and as well as a way of securing you inside the apparatus. And some of them even do bind ozone in there as well. The problem with that, though, is that ozone is very reactive, and there's only certain materials that really can, on a long term, withstand the effects of ozone on certain materials. Therefore, a lot of these products that were popularized in Asia and now are becoming available on the U.S. market are really not going to last so long, because they're combining a heating element which has all sorts of different materials, as well as a cloth type of sauna enclosure or various plastics and rubber that ozone reacts with. That's going to cause a breakdown of these materials, and so there are some major problems in a lot of these products that are commonly available nowadays. And with the internet, a lot of these products are becoming more and more available in the States, but yet there's still a lot of confusion and a lot of misinformation about really the quality there. But as far as the heaters go, I was explaining that ceramic is one of the types of heating elements, and the origins of these ceramic heaters actually it gets into some really interesting technology, because these ceramic materials were actually made by actually growing a symbiotic microbial community in the clay that they create these ceramics out of. And so what they do is they actually ferment these clays, various microbes, and they grow these microbes, and one of the popular, more scientifically evaluated types of microbes is called EM, for effective microorganisms. And that's a technology that was started in Japan by a guy named Dr. Higa. And basically he figured out that you could grow these microbial communities in clay and then bake them, and the bioenergetic structure of the microbial community would retain in a fixed state in the ceramic material that was created. What these do is they emit a low-level far infrared, as well as some other infrared spectrums, but this is a passive type of far infrared. It's not a high intensity. It's actually more on the on a subtle energy level, but there is a far infrared spectrum coming out of these materials. But again, it's a very low level. But one of the ways that this intensity was increased was by mixing layers of metallic materials in with these ceramics, and therefore electricity is passed through them. The ceramics are therefore heated, and that increased the intensity of the far infrared. But what happens when they do this is it also is producing a lot of other types of heat. It's not just far infrared, and these materials can heat up to quite high temperatures as well during this process. High temperatures mean more likelihood of failure, and like I said, there's other types of heat, which include near-infrared and mid-infrared spectrums that are going to be coming from this type of heater as well. Because of that, it's not going to attain the same type of resonance as a pure infrared was emitted. So
a lot of noise, you're saying, really, basically, on those kind of systems. quite a lot of noise as well as the signal you're looking for.
Basically, yeah. I like to look at it as noise as well, because there is some far infrared, but there's also this kind of distracting other types of heat. That's one type of heater that is common in far infrared saunas, as well.
Do you identify these in any particular way, or just from the manufacturer's description, or are there certain terms that you look for to know to understand which type you?
Well, usually these are just referred to as ceramic heaters. There's also, and most manufacturers will not even get into how these ceramics are created with these microbial communities and such. I just happen to have studied that technology quite a bit, so I'm familiar with that background. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of companies that sell these technologies won't even really even know that about how these ceramics are created. But it's a technology that has come from Japan, but has proliferated through other Asian countries such as Korea, where a lot of types of infrared ceramics are now sold. Like I said, there's quite a few passive infrared ceramics that are sold as like jewelry and different types of, and they even make fibers out of these infrared materials and entwine them into clothing. And there's other ways that they make these infrared aside from the ceramic stuff that I've explained, but that's probably not an appropriate topic.
Yeah.
The other type that is common is, which is pretty similar, is when it comes to other minerals like jade and amethyst and some other materials, and it's pretty similar how these are used. They are commonly layered with other types of heating elements, which include conductive materials, metals, which increase their temperature and therefore allow them to emit more of the infrared wavelengths. But again, these also will produce the same type of noise as the ceramic type of heaters do, so it's not just going to be a pure infrared. Carbon and charcoal is another type of heater, which is pretty similar in how it's used as well. These materials, again, they're heated with electricity by layering with conductive metallic elements. This increases their temperature, therefore it emits far infrared as well as other types of heat, the near infrared and mid infrared. And the key here is that carbon and ceramics and all these other minerals are not conductive, and therefore metals are used to conduct electricity, therefore increase their temperature and cause them to emit the far infrared more intensely, or even just to start, the exception being the ceramics, which are naturally going to emit a small amount of infrared wavelength. That kind of brings us into a new type of far infrared heating technology, which actually makes carbon conductive and eliminates the need for any type of metallic material to be used in the heating element. This allows electricity literally to be passed through the carbon fibers and increase their temperature, but increase the temperature only enough to emit the certain spectrum of far infrared wavelength between 7 and 14 microns to produce the ideal type of heat. And basically the way this is done is by crystallizing the fibers, the carbon fibers, into a new material which is called active carbon fibers. Anyone that's familiar with carbon might be familiar with the fact that carbon is not conductive normally. So really this is a breakthrough in producing these type of heaters, because, and just in material science in general, because it's a way of making carbon actually conductive and therefore eliminating the need for any metallic elements in the heater, allowing the proper type of far-infrared wavelength to be produced and a minimum of electricity to be used to heat the carbon to a low enough heat state that it can emit just the far-infrared. Say there's negligible amounts of noise as far as other types of heat. And this allows the body to react naturally to the far-infrared with selective absorption, slowly increasing the body temperature, much like what I was describing before during exercise and fitness. This makes a much safer and cooler far-infrared sauna. But don't get me wrong, just because it's cooler, it doesn't mean that you're not going to sweat. It's a very intense sweating that still happens in these saunas, but it's done with a minimum of electrical power, much safer, and the heaters in these saunas will actually last much, much longer with no service requirements.
Josh, if we can translate all that, was a very technical explanation and a very good one, but translating that into customer benefits then, this new kind of technology enables, it's going to be longer lasting, so it's a better investment. Yes? It works at a lower temperature, so it's more comfortable. It still has the effect, right, because all the difference is that you heat up in an infrared sauna and the air doesn't. Traditional sauna where it's the air that gets up. There's no moisture or metallic parts and nothing that can actually cause rapid corrosion. So any other benefits for this I might have missed?
Yeah, in fact, I didn't even get into the real basis of the theory behind this new type of heater in the contrast to the normal type of sweating that's going to occur in a normal type of sauna or really a normal type of far-infrared sauna.
Can we come back to that a bit?
Yeah.
You know, this might be a bit more technical. I'd like you to, you know, if you've got another type to describe, of course, do, but then bring in the ozone sauna type. But then I'm already getting questions, Josh, and people are asking questions like, you know, how did this work? I mean, you know, what are the contraindications? Will it help this condition? How long should I be in for this disease and so on? Those are the kind of things that people are most interested in, I think. So lay out the technical as you are, but don't go too deep.
Okay.
Otherwise, it'll overwhelm everybody, and they won't get their main questions answered, which is, how do I use that to help my condition?
Okay. Yeah. First of all, when I'm comparing this new type of far-infrared heating element and the types of saunas that are made with it, I really think that it's a good comparison to actually lump in all the other types of far-infrared heating elements into really more like a traditional type of sauna, because the other types of heaters, they're using not just far infrared, but other types of heat, and this is going to heat the skin, therefore just have a simple opening of the sweat glands and simple detoxification, whereas the theory behind this new type of far infrared heater and the detoxification that is going to occur is basically what it does is it aligns the intracellular water molecules into a hexagonal structure inside the body. And this gets into the structuring of water and energy causing changes in literally in the crystalline structure of liquids, and kind of dates back to the work of Victor Schauberger and the memory of water. And the bottom line is that the more we affect water and structure the water effectively, we're going to be able to more efficiently detoxify the body. In this case, the hexagonal shape is actually collecting up exactly 6 water molecules into a microtubule. This seems to create literally a fiber optic response, and I know I'm getting technical, and I'm really sorry, but this is some of the background as to what's really differentiating this kind of technology, and it does tie it into the ozone, as I'm going to talk about in a couple minutes, about